Live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
The day the Lord has made, and Seattle is giving us reason to continue to pray that people wake up. They have now okayed attacks on what Danny West needs, bizarrely calls, what did he say, the super rich? It's $150,000 in Seattle that hits you with this tax. It's a payroll tax. So the assumption is that businesses will pay it. But funny thing, businesses don't pay taxes. There's not a business in the world that pays taxes. That is always passed on to the consumer. And in this case, it'll probably be passed on to the employee, probably be a reduction in pay. So we have that. We have Tacoma that is now talking about guaranteed income. There's already guaranteed income in the United States. If you're not working, you can get $40,000-$50,000 a year in cash and benefits, but now they just want to send you a check. This is Tacoma. Tacoma that is also thinking that they need to fire their officers. And then there's this. This just continues. It's Mask Diktat Day. This is Dr. Jeff Duchin, the so-called King County health official.
Gathering, whether it's a small barbecue or a gathering to protest systemic racism, we must take precautions. And that means distancing, mask use, good hand hygiene, avoid face-to-face contact, shouting.
You know what? You know what? Today is the mask diktat day. Jay Inslee says businesses can't let you in unless you cover your face with a bandana or a random piece of cloth or a mask. I've been through the numbers. I have exhausted the numbers. There is zero scientific evidence that this works. He put out a limp little UCLA op-ed yesterday, which is good news. Your pressure on Jay Inslee is working. He knows, people know, there is no data behind this. But I did something special. If you text us right now at 800-465-8770, I am helping Jay Inslee with his diktat. How? There's a medical exemption to the diktat. He said this in his speech when he was wearing his goofy clown-colored mask. And he said there's a medical exemption. And he said that store employees, business employees, are not allowed to ask you anything about it. If Jay would like to provide more details to what he qualifies as a medical exemption, Jay Inslee can do that. But here's my suggestion. If you have a medical exemption to wearing a mask, then go text 800-465-8770. Just text mask. That's the keyword we're going to use, Alex. Text mask to 800-465-8770, mask. And we'll send you a Facebook link to Jay Inslee saying just that. There's a medical exemption and no one at a store can ask you about it. Save this to your phone. And if you are entering a store and you are unmasked and someone from the store asks you to put on a mask, be super polite. Be kind. It's not their fault. This is Jay Inslee's doing. Show them the video. Here's the governor saying there's a medical exemption. Here's the governor saying you at the stores don't get to ask a single word about the medical exemption. You just accept the fact that the person has one. So if you have a medical exemption, you have a medical condition that stops you from wearing a mask, there you go. This way the store can instantly support Jay Inslee's diktat in the right way. You know what? Can we do something different? You guys okay if we do something different? I'm a little tired of masks. Are you? And the corona? Are you? The COVID? Just one last thing. I am tired of it. One last thing. Jim Bruner at the Seattle Times called this out on Twitter. Thank you for this, Jim. It's weird. The day before Jay Inslee's mask diktat goes into place, he releases a fear-mongering tweet. It's all record cases. And Jim Bruner corrected the governor. You released 3 days worth of cases and counted them as one day, Jay Inslee. Isn't it weird the way the counting of the COVID always makes the COVID seem worse? This, as the CDC is getting ready to drop its epidemic status. So weird. All the counting always makes it seem worse. All right, can we just please stick with me? Do you remember the first time you saw this? If you're a young person, if you've never seen it before, greatest story song, maybe in country music history. I know about Big John, such a... This one's biblical. Turn it up, Alex.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you."
The boy said, "This is still on my iPod." I guess there's not iPods anymore, is it? My iPhone. "The best has ever been. This happened yesterday, and it was the day, of course, that we learned that Charlie Daniels had died. I went yesterday. I'm getting addicted to putting my weight vest on and just torturing myself trying to run up hills. I know it sounds a lot of fun. Sounds like a ton of fun. But that song came on, and it just gave me all this energy. This is a man who earned his living the way he dreamed of earning his living. And this is a guy who never bent. He refused to bend to what the styles were. That was Charlie Daniels then. And we're going to play a little bit more of his music throughout the show. Charlie was a great patriot. He was a guy who began speaking up politically. I guess maybe he did it before that, but I was unaware. But he began speaking up on Twitter. And, of course, that's where all political things happen, is Twitter. He began speaking up 5 or 6 years ago, and he became very prolific at this. And the fascinating thing is, you could look back through that man's career, and he was on stage with every sort of person, if you want to think of people in types. He worked with every sort of person. He was beloved. He was a guy with this great, great reputation for being a friendly guy. But he's also a guy who crossed over lines. That song, I remember seeing that song. Charlie Daniels performed that song on like Saturday Night Live, back when that was a comedy show. You know, it's now a political show, but it used to be a comedy show. I remember watching him do that. And then he was on, like, oh gosh, you won't remember this, but King Biscuit Flower Hour and all these rock-oriented shows. And you watch him play this, and it's other songs of his, like Long-Haired Country Boy. But he's a guy who just stayed who he was. That's hard to do these days. It's hard to continue to be an artist and stay who you are. He never bent. And he never felt the need to bend. And it's amazing how many artists just follow the popular path, just follow the path of least resistance in Hollywood. I think of a guy like Bruce Springsteen. It boggles the mind that Bruce Springsteen can be a liberal. Because, A, there's nothing liberal about the Democrat Party. There is absolutely nothing liberal about it. It is aliberal. It is the party of brute force. It's the party of speech codes. It's the party of forcing you to bake the cake, forcing you to say the pronoun, forcing you to pretend to be a racist. If you're not, you are forced to pretend. There are teachers that are being pressured in our state to force kids to think of themselves as racist, but only if they're white. Don't know how that solves racism, to install more racism. Because you know me, I'm very clear. Absolutely. Black lives absolutely matter. That's why I will not back the violent Marxist organization called Black Lives Matter Incorporated. But you know the Washington State, Western Washington schools. They're not going to draw that distinction. They're not going to talk about the actual goals of Black Lives Matter Incorporated. They're not going to admit the human nuance. They're not going to admit that there are people who are white, who don't have a racist bone in their body. They can't admit that, because this has nothing to do with education. It has nothing to do with creating peace. It has to do with creating division. And they go down that path, and musicians go down that path. And Bruce Springsteen, how is it that you can grow up on the streets of New Jersey and gain the wealth that you have gained and the freedom that you have and not appreciate this country? And Bruce would probably tell you, well, I do this because I am so fortunate. No, you're not. You worked your tail off touring and playing nightclubs in New Jersey in Asbury Park. You were a fiend at playing out constantly. You didn't get lucky. You happen to have a great talent at writing songs, and to have the wealth that Bruce Springsteen has and not understand that is only possible in a country like America. And then to look at that 60 years of Democrat policies meant to lift people from poverty that have failed and continue to fail. And then to be in the cities you're in and see the violence you see in the Democrat cities, and you still must give in to the left. Thank goodness there was Charlie Daniels. Never bent. Never bent. This other reason that I love this is it gave me a connection point with my father. Because it was country style music. And I did. I loved a lot of country music, but I was getting to that age where it was rock and roll for me, and Aerosmith. And it started as Kiss, and then it was Styx, and then Aerosmith, and then the Stones. And I mean, from there on out, the Moody Blues, and I could go down the list with you, and you and I could do it together. But this gave me a point of connection with my dad, Charlie Daniels. Have you seen this guy?
The devil opened up his case and he said, I'll start this show. And fire flew from his fingertips as he rolled up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this.
I love how it's mechanical. There's no soul to it. It's menacing. I remember telling my dad that this guy, Charlie Daniels, would watch this together. My dad had this really interesting observation. You know how it ends. You know what happens. The young man defeats the devil. And I remember watching that with my father in his home. You know what he noticed? Because my dad was a big man. My dad was a big old kind of farmer guy. But he had grown into obesity. And I remember my dad watching Charlie Daniels and saying, he's pretty big. It's pretty large. And I knew that connection point to my dad. I said, yeah, he is. He's got great long hair and a beard. And I remember my dad saying, I should grow my hair long. I said, yeah, grow your hair long. I remember when my dad was, you know, getting towards the end of his life and he grown his hair super long. He had a super long beard. And I remembered. I came through the hospital one day, and I brought a video of Charlie Daniels. I said, Dad, you made it. You look like Charlie. Brought it in his cowboy hat. So it brings us this point of connection. And I wish more artists had the guts to stick with who they were. You know who I admire for this is I haven't seen Carrie Underwood take the path of least resistance yet. I haven't seen that. You know who else held to that? A good portion of the Ramones held to that. You know who else did? Believe it or not, Joe Perry from Aerosmith is a hardcore conservative. He stands to that. And yesterday, I heard this on Dory Monson's show. Yesterday, Neil Young says, we don't want the president playing our songs. I don't want him playing my songs. I got a suggestion for you, Neil. Go to ASCAP BMI. Find out how much money you got for the president playing your song, and you give that money straight back. It's dirty money. You return it and say, I will not take it. Oh, yeah. Yet Trump has to pay money to play those songs, right? There's a new language. There's this new language of you have to take the path of least resistance. You have to. Silence isn't okay. When we come back, I'm going to talk with a gentleman who is a retired academic. He left academia about reclaiming the language from the left. He has a lot to say about the Supreme Court and their perversion of language in trying to keep the left rolling. That's next on the Todd Herman Show. Todd Herman Show for a while. You know I insist on not using the language of our opponents. You know I don't do that. That's why I refuse to use the word progressive when I talk about the left. That's why I have constructed the absolute moral truth of this. Yes, Black Lives Matter. That's why I will not and cannot support the violent Marxist organization called Black Lives Matter Incorporated. You have to have the language to have the culture. And I'm aware that Michael Savage has said this. I'm not trying to steal, but you have to have that. You've got to have those things together. So I always want to partner with people who see these things and who work on these things in different ways. Man, this is a thrill for me. Since 2009, I've been interacting online with a gentleman who tweets as at Protein Wisdom. He's got a blog that's out as well. I've loved his bio on Twitter. Writer, former academic, and liberty activist. My opinions are mine. They're real and they're fabulous. So I'm really thrilled to finally get to talk in person to Jeff Goldstein, who joins us now on the Todd Herman Show. Jeff, welcome to the show. Say hello to Seattle.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is cool. So you have a desire and a zeal to correct how conservatives are using language, that you've looked at this belief that these political pragmatists have that, well, we mm-hmm. need to really, really concern ourselves about how the media is going to interpret our language, and we need to really concern ourselves about this and be polite and politique. And you use as an example when Rush Limbaugh said, "I hope President Obama fails." And I think what you're saying is, look, we need to be straight and understand our language is going to be misinterpreted anyway, purposely so. So with that as a starting point, let's talk about language and how you think we can and need to reclaim it.
Okay, well, first of all, we have to understand what we mean when we say language. Let's use the current example of Black Lives Matter. So one thing I've always used to kind of teach this point is a hypothetical. Say you have a bunch of egrets walking on the sand, and they fly away, and you walk over and see in the sand, Black Lives Matter. Now, what are you dealing with there? Is that language, or is that something that just looks like language? Unless you think we have woke birds who are down for the struggle, what you're actually dealing with is just marks that look like language and that we see as language because we're conditioned to do so. There's no intention behind those marks. Therefore, it's not language in any meaningful sense. So this goes to textualism and things that Gorsuch, for instance, has just done, where he sees the word sex and he says, well, as a textualist, I cannot give the intent of the legislatures any primacy. I have to see that word and interpret it as it can now mean, right? So anything since 1964 that we can conceivably attach to that mark, sex, grows the meaning of sex. And in doing so, what he's doing is he's not bracketing the intentions of the legislature. He's completely rewriting the text in a new way.
Yes. He's taking a word, sex, And he's saying, okay, I see in this a bunch of bird scribblings that now include gender identity, for instance. I see that included here when it's not included because the language was sex. It was understood to mean biological sex. That's how it was written. That's what it means. But he's taking this this interpretive approach, as you think of it as a painter, a creative interpretive approach, and saying, oh, I can see all these scribblings, and you see this as a surrender to leftist thinking.
Yes, absolutely, because, I mean, he even admits that he knows in 1964 the legislature didn't mean it in this way. So at that point, what is there to interpret? There's no reason for the exercise. He already knows what they meant. So anything further that he does is just him saying, this is how it can potentially be interpreted by people like me. And so therefore, that is now part of the law. That is taking the power of lawmaking away from the legislature and giving it to any person or community that can make it mean something else. And you see this, literary critics do this all the time. And one example I love to use, because I taught this in an honors class when I was teaching at University of Denver, and that was kind of funny because people are paying, what, $50,000, $60,000 a year, and the first book I assigned to them is Curious George. They had to be going, what did I get myself into?
Yeah.
But if you look at Curious George, for example, and it's great to use children's literature in this regard because there's very little text, and you can do so much with it. So the story of Curious George, man in a big yellow hat and a yellow trench coat, goes over to Africa, finds a monkey, brings him back to the United States, and hilarity ensues. Okay, so what do we make of that? Literary critics would do a lot of things with that. Oh, it's a post-colonial narrative, the white man going over, bringing the native back and trying to force him to assimilate. And, you know, there's one interpretation. Another could be he brings this monkey back who is, you know, sleeping in his bed, wearing his pajamas. The guy's wearing a trench coat all the time. It's kind of pedophilic grooming or something like that. I mean, you can do a lot of things with it, but then you have to ask yourself, ultimately, what do I think H.A. and Martha Ray meant when they wrote this book? And any reasonable person who's thinking clearly will say, well, they're just writing a book about a curious monkey. You know, that's what they're trying to get across. This is not a post-colonial narrative. This is not any, you know, it's not something that can be tied to queer theory. I mean, you can do that, and people do that all the time. But the question is, when we talk about interpretation, what do we think we're doing with the text when we say we're interpreting it? And that's the crucial point.
Yes,
if
yes. I remember Curious George was banned. Curious George was banned in some schools. And I thought, what? Curious George? And then I read that people said, oh, yeah, it's racism. This is clearly comparing black people to a monkey. And I thought, what? This has been my favorite book since I was a little kid. My parents were, my parents said there's one thing in this life will get you in trouble is you use the N-word for a black person, you get your mouth washed out with soap. This has never occurred to me, but you're exactly right that people apply queer theory to this, et cetera. And that's how we end up with anything can be reinterpreted because, you know, what I'm seeing, Jeff, is what the left wants is for words to mean what they need them to mean at the moment. Is that right?
Yes, and they've essentially been able to do that because we have conceded this idea of interpretation that allows the reader, the group, the individual, whomever wants to take what they see, apply their own signification to it, and then either claim, well, that's what the author meant, if they want to tarnish the author, or it means whatever I think it can mean beyond what the author ever thought that, you know, once you put something out there, it's you're responsible for it in perpetuity, regardless of how it's reinterpreted, twisted, etc. So by that way, by that means, they're taking away your agency and giving it to themselves. They have ownership over you. If you aren't allowed to mean what you mean, if they can determine what you mean, then they own you.
Yes.
And that's an attack on, and it's a very pointed and intentional, I believe, attack on individual autonomy. The group gets to decide what you mean, and in that way they get to subsume you.
Exactly. And this is so spot on. Jeff Goldstein's with us, Protein Wisdom on Twitter and blogging writer. He says former academic. I think you're still an academic, maybe not working in academia. But let's get down let's get down to some, you know, some terms and some things that I think we need to do to conquer this phenomenon. In schools, kids are taught now, at least in Washington State, there's no he or her. So it's they and them. And I think what parents need to do is, you know, start at the very beginning of teaching their kids from day one. Here's a he, here's a her. Your body is yourself, and teach this to kids so that when they get to school, this does seem a bizarrety. So that's one example. There's other examples. For instance, Jeff, having been a former, you know, being a former academic, there is anti-racism training going on in schools that is in and of itself teaching that one race of people has in their DNA racism. So how do we, as conservatives or just as sane people, I mean, you don't need to be a conservative to consider that insane. How do we, as sane people, just maintain or take the language back? What are the steps as you see it?
Well, we reject the premises that the left has applied to what we think we're doing when we interpret. You can go back to the New Critics and onward through the 60s. There was, the postmodern movement. Roland Barthes writes The Death of the Author. Like everything the left does, they couch this in uplifting language. They want to democratize the text, they say. And what they're saying is we want to take ownership over your meaning and vote on it as a mob. So it sounds good, but it's obviously, you know, that is an assault on individual agency and individual autonomy. When you write something, when you attach a meaning to a mark, you are fixing your intent right there. That's what makes it a word. It's the mark plus what you're referring to, right? That's a sign. So this idea that a text is living and that it can grow and expand and so on and so forth, that is a very romantic and idealized and sometimes, you know, enjoyable way to look at a text. You can do all sorts of things with a text. You could read Moby Dick, for instance, and not care at all what Melville meant. Or to go back to the Curious George example, you can read it as a post-colonial text. But to me, that's no different than taking it and folding it into origami swans. You're just using the text for your own personal enjoyment. You're not interpreting it in a sense of trying to understand what the author was trying to convey to you. So it's a creative writing game to re-envision something and steal someone else's work to make it your own.
And this is all on purpose. This is all, as I see it from the left down, we've got about 3 minutes left with Jeff Goldstein, Protein Wisdom. This is all on purpose from the top down. For instance, the academic rules, when you as in academia say, we have invented this rule that all white people are racist and we're going to treat things that way, that whiteness is a disease. And look, I've talked to black people about whiteness and I've actually gotten some really very heartbreaking examples of a friend of mine, Dre, said, hey, I was a little black kid, was praying to a God I was taught was white. I listened to that, Jeff, and I go, dude, that's heartbreaking. That's I get, because I'm hearing his words, his meaning he's attaching to those. But in academia, and I've got to know this because you're a former academic, I think these things are done on purpose. Do professors know when they teach concepts like this, that they're actually destroying the words of others? Do they know that, or are they caught up and confused?
Oh, they absolutely know. But it's their industry. You know, I'll go again to literary theory and literary critics. I mean, this is how they get tenure. This is how they publish. You know, it's constantly reimagining a text that has always meant what it meant. What you can later do with it is something that they will, you know, use to, you know, prosper and enhance their career. They know. Now, the whole, I mean, like I said, from the new critics on, the reader response theory, all that stuff was a way of killing off the author, of saying, okay, the author may have done this, but now we get to read it this way. And we can go and apply current trends and current fashions and current thought to something that was written, you know, years before that thought ever took shape, and pretend that we're finding something in the text that is there when what we're doing is simply rewriting it ourselves. Yep. So, and you see this with statues now, for instance, you know, people are ripping down because the language of their time, the thoughts of their time differ from the thoughts of our time. And we want to retrospectively apply current mores to things that happened, you know, a century ago. So it's a way to cancel people using contemporary ideas and actually applying it back to what they wrote by claiming that it's in the text when in fact it's not. You're putting it there. You are applying your intent to the things that they wrote and put before you in order to, again, take away their agency and elevate your own. And what has frustrated me so much over the years is watching this, watching the right normalize these ideas of language that are pushed by the left that always will always push us leftward because it's always about giving control over the individual to some group. And we now know lots of groups will use this cynically to come back and try to harm the individual or cancel the individual or nullify individual agency. One thing I did when I was teaching, which was really interesting, I taught Toni Morrison's Beloved. And afterwards, we had a great discussion of race and rememory and things like that. And then I decided to do something a little tricky. I told the class afterwards, Toni Morrison is the pen name of a white man. I just made that up, obviously. And yeah. How does that change your thinking on what you just read? And it was kind of fascinating to see how, based on who they thought the author was, meaning somehow changed.
Wow!
And it's the same book. It's it's the same words they had just read, but all of a sudden, their perception of who intended it made them reconsider what it was they had just read. Everything they had just thought got thrown into flux. So you can see when people come to understand that a text is fixed at the time it's written, it's not alive in any sense other than, like I said before, of the romantic sense of what we can, how we can play with it, then it becomes something we can talk about in terms of interpreting.
That's
otherwise,
I can see why you're a former academic. That's brilliant. That's a brilliant thing to do because it also opens the mind to how are you actually perceiving this text? So that's brilliant. And it really is about bravery. And also notice when people are co-opting your thoughts. Because to co-opt a thought, for instance, is to say things, and Orwell, you know, obviously wrote a lot about language, but I want to wrap this up, Jeff Goldstein, where we started it, is this is why I've given people the toolkit. When someone comes to you and says, do Black Lives Matter? have it at the tip of your tongue. Of course, Black Lives Matter. That's why I cannot and will not support a violent Marxist group called Black Lives Matter Incorporated. Do you mean trans women? No, I do not. Look, obviously you agree everyone should have access to health care. I agree that everyone should have the ability to purchase health care at the lowest cost we can do that without enslaving others. We need to get crisp on these things, right?
Yeah. And we need to have each other's backs. And one of the things that I saw, and this was and remains so frustrating for me, is people like Gorsuch who use this idea of language that is fundamentally incoherent. And it has become normalized. And as long as we accept that, as long as we accept that when I say this, it can also mean everything that it could potentially ever mean going forward in the future. I mean, Gorsuch rules on sex, but he didn't say, I mean, the text doesn't say human sex, right? So what's coming next? Civil rights for space aliens, for, Siri and Alexa? I mean, it's not, by his own logic, that's where he's going to have to go.
Right.
And that's got to stop. He has to understand that, yes, I am reading something, and the conventions, legal conventions, say that it has to be the clearest way of suggesting intent in the text. You're trying to be as clear as possible about what the intent of the legislature is. Having said that, you have to also understand that it was the legislature who wrote that, that what you're reading does not exist as language outside of their intent to give it to you as such. I mean, this is something that Gorsuch acknowledges by even claiming he needs to interpret it or read it. I mean, you're not going to read and interpret the scratchings of egrets. You're not going to look into the clouds and see what looks like bunnies copulating and think that's a linguistic text unless, again, you think, God is talking to you. And this is, in a way, I think we're going back to that time when people did read things like clouds and locust swarms and give them metaphysical meaning and kind of ran with that. It's regressive. Yeah. It pretends to be progressive, but in fact it's really regressive. And we have to understand what language is, who controls it, how it's controlled, and what it means to interpret. If what we're trying to do is understand what the person who gave us the signs wants us to understand, then our goal should always be to try to figure out what that person meant, not what we can do with what we're looking at on the other side of it as the receivers of the text.
Absolutely. And I'll just close with this. Jeff Goldstein's been with us, Protein Wisdom on Twitter and blogging, former academic. Just remember, folks, a guy showed up in John Lennon's garden and said, you wrote I Dig a Pony about me. And John said, no, I was having fun with words. I've never met you. I don't know who you are. And then it says, I dig a pony. It's nonsense. That's what it meant. Hey, Jeff, we appreciate you joining us. Protein Wisdom on Twitter is must follow. The blog is Protein Wisdom. And I hope more people take you up on this to talk about the reclaiming of the language, because if conservatives and others, sane people, don't reclaim the language, she all done. Just put a fork in the United States. Appreciate you coming on the Todd Herman Show.
I appreciate you having me, Todd. Thank you so much.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Get to a little bit of an experiment. We're going to play a game with the Seattle Times when we come back. It's a bit of a war game. Remember that? We're going to take their two pieces they ran yesterday about how to tell if you're being manipulated by news that is coming from the right wing. Because as near as I can tell, is I read their analysis, there's no such thing as left-wing news. No such thing. all comes from the fever swamps of the right wing. So we're going to take their analysis. We're going to take their analysis of how to read news, and we're going to take a look at how they do things. Because here's their examination. They have a little graphic. How tweets about the pandemic video spread across the online communities. Spanish language, far right international. Political pro-Trump community, far-right hyper-partisan media, anti-vaccine community, conspiracy theory community. Okay, where is the documentation of how the myth that you get the COVID, you die, got built? How is the myth of mass? Is it that Americans are cowering in their homes from a disease that if you're under the age of 50 has a 0.005% death rate? A few weeks ago in Washington state, the death rate was 0.00016. How is it, Seattle Times, that your readers still believe a random piece of cloth protects them? How is it that they think they're going to die from the COVID? How is it that they have no bloomin' clue that the death rate has plummeted? How is that, Seattle Times? Where does that fit into your ecosystem of how to consume news the proper way? Here's the game when we come back. One dude on Twitter versus the entire Seattle Times publishing arm. All of it. Gee, I wonder who'll win. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show.